Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for joining me this evening. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry, coming to you from right here in the Orlando, Florida area. I am a Christian naturopathic doctor with a practice and ministry located here in Orlando. Again, a special welcome to my friends, wherever you may be listening from, here in the U.S. and around the world, especially my friends over in Costa Rica. Thank you for joining me once again. Happy to have you. We have a very exciting and informative show for you today. I'd like to remind you, if you would like to call in, you can do so at 917-889-2207, 917-889-2207. You can feel free, if you would like to look me up on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. That's N-A-T-U-R-E-D-O-C, Nature Doc. Again, we have a very enlightening and interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking about a few things, and I actually was going to talk about an issue that I talked about on yesterday. I'll give a short presentation on talking about how certain emotions affect specific organs in the body, and maybe we'll do that at another time. But maybe we'll do that next week. But we do have a very interesting show for you today. Nevertheless, we're going to be talking about, partly what we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about five things that your breath may say about your health. Five things that your breath may actually say about your health. Very interesting. We're also going to be talking about some research that has come out recently, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but we've talked about the benefits of fruits and vegetables. But today in our first article, we're going to be talking about this in this first segment, this which is the Week in Natural News Review segment, where we articles on health naturally primarily from that came out during the week from around the world, around the globe, and we discuss and analyze them. This particular article we'll start off with right after our quick break. We'll be dealing with how eating fruits and vegetables can actually slash the likelihood that you would die earlier by 50%, and die earlier than you would if you didn't eat them. Again, that goes in harmony with what we've talked about on this show before, that the closer you eat in harmony with the colors of the rainbow and the closer you eat to the garden, the healthier you will be and the less likely you will be to die from some disease or abnormality that you would not otherwise have developed. Again, you are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We're going to take a quick break. And I'm going to come back. We're going to jump into the first segment. After that, we'll go over into our next segment, where we will be looking at the healing food segment. We'll talk a little bit about beans and how they can actually help your heart simply by eating more beans. And we will close it out with our final segment, time permitting, talking about the healing herb or healing supplement. Portion, we will continue where we stopped off in that last week, where we were talking about a healing herb or healing supplement that have been shown to be very beneficial most of the time in some type of a clinical setting. Again, I'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness.
How do you feel? No, really.
How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. The Simple Natural Health Secrets Blog.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'd like to thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. We're going to jump right into our first story, and this is our first segment, the Weekend Natural News Review. Now, this first story is entitled It's from Mercola.com, and is dealing with the benefits of eating fruits and vegetables. And it's entitled, Eating More Fruits and Vegetables Can Cut Your Risk of Dying in Half. Now, many people understand and know that they should eat more fruits and vegetables. Many of them don't. But again, this just goes in harmony with those laws of health that you heard me mention on here before, where we talk about trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet or nutrition, and self-control or temperance. Now, in this article, which was published on the 14th, about roughly 6 days ago, Dr. Mercola goes on to point out that despite the fact that vegetables have been proven to help lower your risk of chronic disease as well as to support longevity, most Americans are still not eating nearly enough of these relatively inexpensive and natural foods, he points out. He goes on to reference how the latest data shows that nearly 23% of Americans report consuming vegetables and fruit less than one time daily, with a median vegetable intake of just 1.6 times per day overall. He says further that adding in more vegetables to your diet is a simple and powerful step to help dramatically improve your health, and I concur with that. He says vegetables are quick, and I'm quoting him, to prepare and come in so many different varieties that they should suit virtually everyone's taste. He says if you want even more motivation to eat more veggies, check out these newly unveiled health benefits, which are so dramatic, the researchers called them staggering. So this is why he named it, the article, pointed out how you can actually cut your risk of dying by 50%, by half, simply by increasing the amounts of fruits and vegetables that you eat. He points out how people eat 7 or more portions of vegetables and fruit a day actually have a 42% lower risk of dying from any cause compared to those who eat less than one portion. He says they also enjoy a 31% lower risk of heart disease and a 25% lower risk of cancer. So by eating 7 portions or more of fruits and vegetables daily, you can actually decrease your risk of dying from any cause by 42%. Compared to those who eat less than one portion, and also enjoy a 31% lower risk of heart disease and a 25% lower risk of cancer. He also cites the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health, And he says the research published in this journal is among the first to quantify the health benefits of eating different amounts of fresh produce. He says, as you might suspect, eating any amount of vegetables is better than none at all, but the benefits increase with more servings. Number one, he points out that those who ate 5 to 7 servings of vegetables and fruits per day had a 36% lower risk of dying from any cause, and this is, again, published in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Number two, 3 to 5 servings were associated with a 29% lower risk, and 1 to 3 servings was associated with a 14% lower risk. So essentially, the more fruits and vegetables that you eat, of course, as long as you're not going over into gluttony, the more fruits and vegetables that you eat, the healthier, the greater the benefits are. And he asked the question, what counts as a vegetable serving? According to the U.S. government, 1 cup of raw or cooked vegetables or fresh vegetable juice or 2 cups of raw leafy greens can be considered as 1 cup from the vegetable group. He says this study also highlighted something that he's been saying for a long time, which is that vegetables had a larger protective effect than fruits. He says, so while consuming small amounts of whole food is fine, even beneficial, if you're healthy, your focus should be more on vegetables, he says. He says, when broken down by vegetables only, each additional daily portion of fresh vegetables lowered participants' risk of death by 16% compared to 4% for fresh fruit. So essentially, the takeaway from this particular study is that the more vegetables you eat, when they tested vegetables alone, it reduced the participant's risk of death by 16%, where when they tested them for fruit, fresh fruit, in comparison, it reduced it to only by 4%. So we don't know what vegetables or fruit they were eating, but that's just the results. Dr. Marcola goes on to point out how he believes we all need to eat large amounts of fresh, high-quality vegetables every day to achieve a high level of health. He says most vegetables are not very calorie dense, and as a result, they probably should constitute the bulk of your diet by volume. He says, even though my diet is 70% fat by calories, if you were to spread out all the food I eat in a day, the largest volume of food would be vegetables. He goes on to point out how, of course, vegetables contain an array of antioxidants as well as other disease-fighting compounds that are very difficult to get anywhere else. He says plant chemicals called phytochemicals can reduce inflammation and eliminate carcinogens. While others regulate the rate at which your cells produce, get rid of old cells, and maintain DNA. He points out further how studies have repeatedly shown that people with higher vegetable intake have the following. Number one, lower risk of stroke, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, Alzheimer's disease, and heart disease. So those who have a higher vegetable intake have lower risk of these. Also, number two, they have higher scores on cognitive tests. In other words, it increases the capacity of your brain to function, which we've talked about before. We talked about that also in context of the Daniel diet, which the prophet Daniel requested in the book of Daniel. He and his three friends requested a diet. They actually requested what we would call a vegan diet or a plant-based diet with water. And they requested a 10-day test. And at the end of this 10-day test, eating this, what we would call a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, they were 10 times smarter than those who were eating the Babylonian diet of the time, which would probably be what we would call the Western diet, or something similar to the Western diet that we have now, what's been called the SAD diet. He points out further that those who eat higher intake of vegetables have a lower risk of certain types of cancer, eye diseases, and digestive problems. They have higher levels of antioxidants in their body, in their bloodstream. They have reduced risk of kidney stones and bone loss, and they have lower biomarkers for oxidative stress. All of these have been found in those who consume larger amounts of vegetables. Again, it's in harmony with what we've talked about on here before, eating. The closer you eat in harmony with the colors of the rainbow and with the garden, the closer you eat to the garden, the healthier you'll be. So with the epidemic that we have of diabetes, obesity, hypertension, different cardiovascular diseases here in the U.S. and in many places around the world, and we have such a simple outlay that the Creator has given us, He's given us a blueprint, if you will, a map. And if we would follow it, we would we would gain great benefits. If we don't follow it, though, we have what we have now, where we have great sickness, great suffering, death from diseases that are totally reversible and curable. Dr. Marcola goes on to point out further in this article. He says, vegetables have an impressive way of offering widespread benefits to our health. He says, when you eat them, you're getting dozens, maybe even hundreds or thousands of super nutrients that support optimal body-wide health. And he cites a few different foods that we've talked about here before, especially when we've gone and we've talked about different foods in our healing food section. And he points out how sulforaphane, which is in broccoli, has also been known to kill cancer stem cells, thereby striking to the root of tumor growth. And he says the broccoli compound, glucoferrin, which is a precursor of the compound sulforaphane, actually boosts cell enzymes that actually protect against molecular damage from cancer-causing chemicals. Essentially put, broccoli helps protect you from cancer. Secondly, he says the gene that is essential for producing critical immune cells in your gut responds to the food you eat, specifically leafy green vegetables. Finally, he points out, number three, how cauliflower contains a wealth of anti-inflammatory nutrients to help keep inflammation in check, including iodol-3 carbinol or I3C, which is an anti-inflammatory compound that may operate at the genetic level to help prevent the inflammatory responses at its foundational level. And you will notice that the foods that he's mentioning are in a certain family. He's mentioned primarily the two, broccoli. He's mentioned cauliflower. It's very well known that both broccoli and cauliflower, we're not very well known, but for those who practice natural medicine or who are involved in natural medicine and nutrition or who are just up on health and wellness, they will know that broccoli and cauliflower and other foods in that family can be very, very beneficial in fighting off cancer in the body. Finally, he points out how beets are a unique source of, and we've talked about this before, betaine, which is a nutrient that helps protect your cells, proteins, as well as enzymes from environmental stress. He points out how also it's also known to help fight inflammation, protect your internal organs, as beets, improve vascular risk factors, enhance performance, and likely to help prevent numerous chronic diseases. And beets are always also used, just as an aside, to help detoxify the liver. That's beet juice. Finally, he says, he points out how vegetables are one of the best forms of dietary fiber. He says, unless you regularly eat whole fruits and vegetables along with nuts and seeds, you may be missing out on the healthiest forms of fiber available, and that could be a problem, he says. He goes on to say, it is actually because your body can't digest fiber that it plays such an important part in digestion. He says further that soluble fiber like that found in cucumbers and blueberries dissolves into a gel-like texture, helping to slow down your digestion. This helps you to feel full longer, and is one reason why fiber may help with weight control. He says insoluble fiber found in foods like dark green leafy vegetables, green beans, celery, and carrots does not dissolve at all, and it also helps add bulk to your stew. And essentially what it does, it functions as a broom. When you eat that indigestible fiber, it goes through your intestines, especially your colon, and it acts almost as a broom to help sweep the trash out of your intestines. And thus, you have a bowel movement, or it facilitates in you having a bowel movement, and it helps sweep the trash and the filth out of the colon, and thus helps you function better and helps you to be healthier, and you don't have to worry about the trash accumulating in your body, in your colon, and all of the problems that can occur in association with that. He goes on to say further that vegetables, as opposed to processed foods, and he makes a comparison. He says one of the signs that a food is a natural source of fiber is that you must chew it a good number of times before swallowing it. Processed foods, however, he says, basically melt in your mouth and are not going to give you the fiber your body needs. He says vegetables, on the other hand, will, and this is yet another one of its virtues. And he goes on then to cite some of the top benefits, potential benefits, depending, in these high-fiber foods, such from vegetables and fruit. The soluble fiber may help to slow your body's breakdown of carbohydrates and the absorption of sugar, thereby helping with your blood sugar control. It's one of the benefits of eating these fresh fruits and vegetables, especially vegetables, but fruit as well. He goes on to point out, further, another benefit is heart health. An inverse association has been found between fiber intake and heart attack. And research shows that those eating a high-fiber diet have a 40% lower risk of heart disease. So think about it. The more fruit and vegetables that you eat, the less likely you are to have heart disease. And when you look at people who have a history of eating large amounts of foods, especially processed foods and meats and other and some of the other foods, and they typically tend to not eat as much vegetables and fruit. And once you notice that as they have a, those people who have a history of this type of eating would typically have cardiovascular issues to some degree. Now, there are other things that can cause cardiovascular issues as well, like stress, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is eating is probably the single, outside of stress, stress can cause problems, but eating is probably the single most, it's probably the single individual, rather, it's probably the single individual cause of most of the cardiovascular disease, with stress running a very close second, if not on the very heels, as we're beginning to understand more and more about the way stress functions. And actually, the food you eat can actually cause you to not be able to deal with stress on, or distress on a level, which so even the foods can help or hinder the capacity of the human mind and the human body as a whole to deal with stress. He says further, another benefit when it comes to us when we eat lots of fruits and vegetables is the benefit of lessening the likelihood that we will develop a stroke or have a stroke. Researchers have found, he points out, that for every 7 grams more fiber you consume on a daily basis, your stroke risk is decreased by 7%. Again, researchers have discovered, he says, that for every 7 grams more fiber you consume on a daily basis, your stroke risk is decreased by 7%. Now, when it comes to weight loss and weight management, it says fiber supplements have been shown to enhance weight loss among obese people, likely because the fiber increases feelings of fullness, and therefore they would tend to eat less, as opposed to some of the processed foods where you sit down and you eat a bag of potato chips or cookies or whatever it is that you're eating that's processed, and you know before you know it, you're eating again and eating and eating and eating. Skin health. It says fiber, particularly psyllium husk, may help move yeast and fungus out of your body, preventing them from being excreted through your skin where they could trigger acne or rashes. Diverticulitis, dietary fiber, especially insoluble, may help reduce your risk of diverticulitis, which is an inflammation of polyps in your intestines. And it says this type of dietary fiber can actually help reduce your risk of developing this by 40%. And it's not a very pleasant abnormality to have. I've seen people in my practice that have had it, and it's not pleasant at all. So, and I've also seen some of the commercials on television for it by the pharmaceutical companies, and one of the side effects I saw for one drug for it, one of the side effects of one of the drugs that the pharmaceutical company was recommending for it was actually death. So I would say, now, if you've already developed it, you may have to do a little bit more than just eating fruits and vegetables. But definitely you're going to have to start changing your diet drastically and doing some other things that may be necessary to heal up the bowel. But you have inflammation, and it doesn't start off in an inflamed state, but it gets there. And so... But we'll move on to, he says, the next benefit he points out is the reduction of the likelihood of developing hemorrhoids. He says a high-fiber diet may actually lower your risk of developing hemorrhoids, as well as irritable bowel syndrome. Fiber may provide some relief from people with IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. Finally, he points out how gallstones and kidney stones, he says a high-fiber diet may reduce the risk of gallstones and kidney stones, likely because of its ability to help regulate blood sugar. Now, this is, again, this entire article can be found at Mercola.com, and it's entitled, Eating More Fruits and Vegetables Can Cut Your Risk of Dying in Half. If you happen to be on, by the way, if you're online there, if you're listening at blogtalkradio.com, which is the format that we use to broadcast, I also have the chat room up there. I will post the link to the article as well in the event you would like to reference it for yourself. And in the chat room, you can go and read it or reference it on your own behalf. My name is Dr. Keith Henry. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We are still in our first segment of the Week in Natural News Review. And we are going to, at this point, we're going to take one other article before we get to our main topic, which is dealing with five things your breath may say about your health. Now, the next article we will look at, before we move on to that, to our main topic for this segment, for the show actually, is an article that was taken from FoxNews.com in their health section. And this article was published on the 16th, April 16th, about 4 days ago. And it was entitled, and it's in the Fox News section under health, and it's under the alternative medicine, the subheading of alternative medicine. And it was entitled, Herb Supplements Are the Most Common Complementary Medicine in the United States, in the U.S. And the article says, herbs and other dietary supplements, besides vitamins, are the most commonly used type of complementary medicine, also called alternative medicine, in the United States, followed by visits to chiropractors, then yoga, then massage, according to a new report. The article says in 2012, nearly 18% of American adults said they took herbs or other supplements that were not vitamins and minerals. He says other types of complementary medicine were less common. 8.5% said they were treated by a chiropractor or osteopathic physician. 8.4% said they did yoga. 6.8% said they had a massage. And 4.1% said they meditated. And then the article goes on to point out the people who used complementary medicine the most, or rather the what parts of the country they lived in. And it goes on to say that people in the West and Midwest use complementary medicine more commonly than people in other regions, according to the report from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. As for example, 16.4% of adults in the central north United States, including North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri, said that they went to a chiropractor or an osteopathic doctor for a manipulation treatment compared to about 6% of adults in the south. To me, that makes perfect sense. Myself being from the south, I know for a fact that the medicine down there, or the mindset in the South, because of the way they eat there, in the South they love to eat a lot of food that are not healthy for you, and it's entrenched. And so natural medicine probably has a much more of a hurdle down there than perhaps in other places. And so it's, with respect to this particular article, it's interesting to note that. Now, this article goes on to say further that the use of herbs and other non-vitamin supplements was highest in the mountain region, where 28.7% of adults said they used the supplements, followed by the Pacific and Central Northern region, which about 23% of adults said they used the supplements. So about 12% of adults in the Pacific region, that means that covers the areas of California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and Hawaii. About 12% of adults in this region practice yoga, compared to just 5% in the part of the United States that includes Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Other studies show, according to this article, that about half of Americans take some type of dietary supplement. Most commonly, they take multivitamins. The researchers did not include vitamin and mineral supplements in the new study because the use of these supplements has become very common, said study researcher Tanya Clark of the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics. It says that the new report cannot say why use of complementary medicine differs by region, but these differences may be related to cultural, economic, and environmental factors, researchers said. He says, for example, previous studies have shown that studios that offer yoga are more common in cities than in rural areas, and southeastern states also tend to have fewer people in their cities compared to the cities in other regions. So here you have it, that herb supplements are the most common complementary medicine in the United States. A few years back, it was chiropractic, or maybe it was just that people, in terms of people going to alternative practitioners, chiropractors were in the lead. But right now, herb supplements are the most common complementary medicine in the U.S., according to this report at FoxNews.com that was picked up from the CDC. Again, you are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening. You are listening. We're still in our first segment. So now we're going to pivot over and go to our main topic for this show, 5 Things Your Breath May Say About Your Health. This is also an article that was taken from, I think it was Yahoo.com. But we're going to talk about this, and I want to analyze this a little further because it's very interesting. And your body is the best warning when you're sick. Now, there are things that can be subclinical. You may be feeling off. You may be feeling a little not so well, and you may go to the doctor. You may get a blood test. You may get a urine test. You may get a saliva test, whatever type of test you may get. You may go through. You may get x-rays or whatever, and they can't find anything because many times these things are subclinical, but you may be feeling it. So your body is your best first line of knowledge when it comes to you feeling sick or feeling bad. Now, it's interesting, in this particular article, talks about how it starts off by saying it may sound like something out of a science fiction movie, but we may not be too far away from having a complete health exam using only a breathalyzer type 2. And the idea of using breath tests as a medical diagnosis dates back to Hippocrates. Now, as you may or may not know, Hippocrates is considered the father of Western medicine. And most doctors, medical doctors, would take the Hippocratic Oath, which includes first do no harm. Now, they may still take it, and sometimes I don't even know if they still take it, but if they still take it, it is basically the way that medicine is currently practiced in the United States, at least, is that even though they may take the oath, in practice it's not followed. If he was around today, he would be what would be considered a natural practitioner. He would be a naturopath, essentially. He was a physician back around 400 BC. And even in his day, he wrote a paper on breath aroma and disease. And for many years, doctors have begun to notice how particular breath odors can actually be associated with a particular disease or with disease. Today, doctors are even taking the idea a step further by actually diagnosing illnesses through what they are now calling your unique breath print. Tools called mass spectrometers, or rather spectrometers, can actually detect the tiny chemical compounds in your breath, and this was cited by the Wall Street Journal as well. Scientists are beginning to decipher, and I'm going to quote from this article, it says, scientists are beginning to decipher what these combinations mean, and I'm still quoting, in turn are getting a better understanding of what's going on inside our bodies. It says, quote, according to anything you can have a blood test for, there is potentially a breath test for, so long as there is a volatile component, said Reed A. Dwelt, director of the pulmonary vascular program at the Cleveland Clinic, Lemoore Research Institute. He said this in the Wall Street Journal. And then the article goes on to talk about a few of the many illnesses that may be revealed through your breath. Now, let's look at some of these. Number one, lung cancer. Scientists have already known that some animals are able to sniff out certain diseases. I've seen these. I've seen news stories on it where the latest story I heard on it was a lady who, her dog, whenever he would come and he would sniff her, especially when he would get around her breast, he would howl and run away from her. And she found this to be strange. And so she went to the doctor, and sure enough, she had a breast tumor, and she had cancer in this tumor. So when this particular article actually references that, I'm familiar with that happening. That's not the first time I've heard about it. I've heard about it the first time a few years ago. Anyway, the scientists have already known that some animals are able to sniff out certain diseases. So therefore, working off this idea, researchers have actually been trying to develop an electronic nose technology. This would work by detaching different profiles of volatile organic compounds in breast samples, according to the press release, which was issued last year in 2013. The article says, although researchers are not able to clearly identify which VOCs of volatile organic compounds that will actually give off a particular sense that would alert you to a disease being present or a disease state being present, so they're not able to clearly identify which of these VOCs that they're called are linked to different diseases, the study does actually suggest that it is possible for an electronic nose to differentiate lung cancer from different lung conditions and healthy people. It says out of a group of 128 non-smokers and 114 smokers, the technology only misdiagnosed 10 individuals. And the lead author of the study, quote, we have shown that it is possible to use breast tests to correctly identify lung cancer with a high sensitivity rate. The results of our study take us one step further to understand the important new technology. So they were able to take a number of non-smokers, 128 to be exact, and 114 smokers, and test. And the machine or the testing was they only got 10 misdiagnoses. So that's really for such a new technology, that's really not that bad. It's actually pretty good for an emerging technology. The second thing pointed out with respect to the breast is heart failure. The article says one team of scientists was able to detect heart failure through an analysis of patients' breath. The test was originally used to detect kidney failure using a breast test. The heart patients were merely used as control. It did not take long, however, the article says, for the researchers to realize that the heart patients also had their own unique, quote, breath prints. So think about it. It's almost like fingerprints or DNA or whatnot. They're beginning to find that certain breath prints or certain breath scents or breath prints, if you will, as a result of you having a disease state in your body, the body gives off certain chemicals. And so as a result, in certain diseases, because remember, all disease is the body being out of harmony. And in healing, we want to bring the body back into homeostasis. Now, when the body is out of harmony for long enough, you're going to develop disease. And so now the body, because you had the chemical reactions are going to be developed with that disease, of course it's going to give off a unique smell. If you've ever worked with an advanced cancer patient, which I have, and I'm talking about people who have been sent home to die on hospice, and especially if they have a tumor, that cancer tumor, especially if it's significant late stage and it's leaking and et cetera, it will have a very, very foul odor, a very, very foul smell to it. Which is interesting is that if we can pick up the chemical smells or the chemical footprint, chemical print, if you will, breath print, if you will, early on, maybe it can be noted that there's an issue with cancer before it gets to such advanced stages. The article is going to say the heart patients were merely, as I said earlier, used as a control. It did not take long for the researchers to realize that the heart patients also had their own unique breath prints. He says their 2012 study could actually revolutionize the way that doctors are able to detect heart disease by providing a non-invasive alternative test for diagnosis. Next is obesity. Now, I think just looking at the weight or weighing people for this heightened size is It's a pretty good indicator, but nevertheless, this article points out how there was another study conducted by researchers at Cedars Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. They found that one's breast could actually show how susceptible a person is to develop obesity. Okay, so they're going to look at the susceptibility. Researchers analyzed the breath of 792 participants and found that those with high concentrations of the gases methane and hydrogen had higher BMIs, that's body mass index, and higher percentages of fat than those whose breath had the normal mix of gases or a high concentration of either methane or hydrogen alone. So basically, I guess the takeaway is that once you're heading toward obesity or overweight or obesity in this particular, the early signs are that those gases, the internal environment, let's put it that way, the internal environment is going to begin to give these signs to let you know in what direction you're headed in, which to me, to a degree, that makes sense. And this was a study conducted by researchers at Cedars Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, and there were 792 participants. So, interesting. Again, 792 participants, and they found that those with high concentrations of the gas methane and hydrogen had higher BMIs and higher percentages of fat than those whose breath had the normal mix of gases or a high concentration of either of the two, methane or hydrogen alone. The next one is diabetes. On diabetes, we're told that, in this particular article, a fruity breath odor or one similar to nail polish can indicate a serious problem in diabetic patients called ketoacidosis. This is a life-threatening problem that occurs when the body cannot use sugar as a fuel source because there is no insulin or not enough insulin. Fat is used for fuel instead. When fat breaks down, waste products called ketones build up in the body. So when they have that fruity smell or smell, it says similar to nail polish, they know that there could be problems based upon these breath prints, if you will. Finally, the last one is pointed out is kidney failure. Breath that has an ammonia-like odor can sometimes occur in people who suffer from chronic kidney failure. The smell is also described as urine-like or fishy. Says the kidneys remove waste from the blood. When the kidneys fail, also known as end-stage renal disease, they are no longer able to remove toxins from the blood. Waste builds up throughout the body, and one of the ways they release is through the respiratory system in the form of bad breath. So, again, if you have bad breath, that is a good indication, bearing any, where it could be, of course, it could be a gum disease or some, you know, mouth problems. But if you rule that out, this is one of the things that natural practitioners, we always know that if you have bad breath, then it's impossible for you to be healthy. And especially if it's not dental problems or oral problems, then it's internal, and the internal environment, if it smells bad, it is bad. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We went through long without taking a break, so we just won't take a break right now. We'll go right into our healing food segment. And our healing food segment, I want to talk about the benefit of beans on your heart. Now, on the healing food segment, we either deal with a food or groups of food, and we've talked about everything on here from broccoli to beets to pineapple to apples and the benefits thereof. But today I want to talk a little bit about beans now and the benefits thereof and look at some of the research that has come out with regard to the benefits of beans. Now, you've heard much about the dangers of LDL or the so-called bad cholesterol and having too much low-density lipoprotein cholesterol in your body and how it can set up a person's arteries to harden and become narrow, which is a condition known as atherosclerosis. And it basically substantially raises the risk for both stroke and heart disease. And basically, medical science doctors recommend that levels of your LDL cholesterol be at or below 200 milligrams per deciliter of blood. I would recommend that it be lower than that, but remember they move the goalposts up and down based upon the health or lack thereof of the majority of people. So if the majority of people in this country, let's say before with blood pressure, for instance, good blood pressure is regarded as 120 or 80. But there are many people who are very, very healthy who have much lower blood pressure than this. Some people who are very healthy may have blood pressures of 112 over 75, or they may even have 108 over 70, and yet they're healthy. But yet the 120 over 80 is considered the standard. So that just goes to show the how typically many times it would be changed, or it would be modified for the majority of the people, whether the majority of the people are healthy or not. Now, it should be remembered that in order, when you're dealing with cholesterol, for instance, that proper diet overall is crucial, and we've talked about that many, many times before. And you must eat in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, as we talked about earlier in the show, as well as close as possible to the diet as well. Now, with respect to beans, we want to get to this and how they help with your heart health and cholesterol, etc. There was a research coordinator at St. Michael's Hospital of clinical nutrition, and they did a study. This is over in Toronto. And they found in this study that by eating just one serving of cooked beans on a daily basis can actually cause a significant reduction in the amount of your LDL cholesterol. And they pointed out how the serving size of cooked beans, which are also often called legumes, is most often referred to as about 3/4 cup. So basically, in this particular study, and the lead researcher was Ms. Vanessa Ha. Again, she's a research coordinator at St. Michael's Hospital Clinical Nutrition and Risk Factor Modification Center in Toronto, found that you can significantly reduce your LDL cholesterol by eating one serving of cooked beans, which is about 3/4 cup. Not only that, when researchers studied the results of 26 clinical studies that included 1,037 mostly middle-aged men and women, they found no difference in the type of beans eaten when it came to their ability to lower cholesterol. So while some of the study participants were determined to be moderately at risk for heart disease, others were considered to be healthy. Nevertheless, when you look at the study, the same effects were enjoyed whether the participant ate chickpeas, peas, lentils, or just beans. As a result of this, researchers determined that over the course of only 6 weeks, the participants who ate one serving of beans each day saw a 5% reduction in their level of LDL or their bad cholesterol. One key finding, they said, that should make nearly every health-conscious individual pleased is the fact that the variety of beans is really not important. And so almost everyone can find at least one variety of beans that they like. And so think about it for a moment. Again, we're back to in harmony with those laws of health, as I said before, that the Creator has given us foods for medicine. They taste good, but they're also beneficial for our health. Many of the things that are being passed off in the grocery stores and even in some health food stores as food is not really food in the truest sense of the term, because food is supposed to be there to sustain life, to help you live. It's not supposed to be there to destroy you. Now, of course, you can eat in such a way and at such times as to undermine the benefit of even good foods, but I'm just talking about in general. But if you're eating, you know, like a rational person would eat, and you're eating good foods, food is designed that you would have health, and not that you would be sick. And so again, eat plenty of beans, or at least eat at least a serving of beans a day, which is considered 3/4 cup. I know everyone doesn't like all kinds of beans, but there are so many different kinds of beans out there. There are black-eyed peas, there's chickpeas, there's kidney beans, and there's lima beans, there's green peas. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So I'm sure you can find some variety of beans that you like, and as a result, help your cholesterol. And the best thing to do is to prevent cholesterol from getting high in the first place. Because typically, by the time you get into a situation where your cholesterol is high and you're being recommended to take Lipitor or some of these other things, the body needs to be readjusted. And so at that time, you may need to get on to herbs and some of these other things. But if you eat like this beforehand and prevent the body from becoming so out of harmony in the first place, then and just include beans and include just those foods, fruits, nuts, grains, vegetables, you will have the benefit that you seek. You will have good health. You will not have to worry about diabetes and cancer and high blood pressure and some of these other things that we see so often. Again, getting good rest, following those laws of health, sunshine, trust in the Creator, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. These things will go a long way for your health. Again, I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We have about 10 minutes left, so what I am going to do is I'm going to go into the final segment here, which is a healing herb, healing supplements. Now, last week I cut off with Oregon grape root, if I'm not mistaken. And again, if you want to go and pick out, listen to what we've been talking about with respect to these herbs and how they work and how to use them, etc., you can go back and listen to the archives, download them. I also recommend that you send the link to your friends and loved ones. You can even download it if you don't catch the show from the beginning. Or if you miss shows, you can download them to a CD and listen to them in your car as you drive, or download them, the file, and put them in your iPad and listen to it as you jog or work out or whatever. This information, some of the information that we provide here is crucial. Now, I got partly through Oregon grape root, which is a herb, and I'm going to pick up. I was almost done, actually, and I was about to hit the section, I think, dealing with how it's beneficial for diarrhea and gastritis. And one of the main constituents in the herb Oregon grape root is a constituent called berberine. And this constituent has been shown to effectively treat diarrhea in patients who have been infected with E. coli, because it inhibits the ability of bacteria to attach to your human cells. And been doing this, this helps prevent infections, particularly in the throat, intestines, and the urinary tract. So Oregon grape root, because it has berberine in it, and berberine has been shown to be effectively treat diarrhea in patients who have ended up with E. coli, it'd be definitely something to consider, Oregon grape root, in such a case. And I'm going to move on from that. And I had talked about before, again, if you want to get everything I said about Oregon grape root, you can go back and listen to last week's broadcast. And the week before that, and the herb that we talked about. I mean, the week before that, and the herb that we talked about, a number of herbs that we talked about. Last week, I mentioned the benefits of Oregon grape root when it comes to acne, allergic reactions, eczema, and psoriasis. How it has been used with that. And I move on now to an herb, and I mentioned this last week, that many people have probably never heard of. It's called OSHA, O-S-H-A. And as echinacea is the antibacterial herb from the American Great Plains, OSHA is the antibacterial herb of the American Rocky Mountains. It is a herb which has antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties, and it's also ideal for viral infections of your sinuses, of your throat, as well as in your upper and lower respiratory system for colds, etc. It helps bring up respiratory secretions, like, for instance, if you have the phlegm in your chest, it can actually help bring that up. Therefore, it's been used and it's been used beneficially, actually, for people with asthma and with coughs and people who have asthmatic breathing difficulties. It actually helps induce sweating as well, and it helps eliminate toxins through the pores of your skin. Basically, anything that can help induce sweating is going to help to detoxify the body. Now, it's been used in some abnormalities. For instance, it's been used in arthritis. It's also been used in carpal tunnel syndrome. In fact, it is a ASHA is actually a traditional remedy in Native American medicine. And anytime the Indians or so-called Native Americans use the herb, you can be sure that it worked. And so there was the home remedies of the American West also for providing long-term relief of inflammation. So it's good for inflammation. It's beneficial as an antibacterial agent. It's also beneficial in sometimes for viral infections which occur in your sinuses and your throat and your upper and lower respiratory system. It's also been used beneficially for bronchitis, for again, for colds, for influenza, and for sinusitis, which, as I pointed out. So, again, I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but it's called ASHA. If you want, you can do a little reading up on it. It comes in tincture. It comes in capsules. You'll be able to find it in different formulas. Sometimes you'll see it combined with other herbs. Now, in my experience and practice, I found that combining herbs by a herbalist or a naturopath or someone who's familiar with making herbal formulations, I found that herbal formulations tend to work better in almost all cases than single herbs. I've seen it work better consistently over and over and over and over again in real world practice. And so typically, even if you're using an herb like this, it's a great idea to combine it with other herbs with which it works synergistically with. And because some of the herbs actually enhance the actions of some of the other herbs that you may take with them. But it needs to be, a knowledgeable herbalist or a naturopath or someone who's been trained in herbology will know which herbs tend to work the best together. They will know which ones would tend to enhance the capacity of some of the other herbs. Now, the next herb or supplement that we will be talking about is one of my all-time favorites. And it's very, very effective. And we have about 4 minutes, so we won't get through it. But it's called slippery elm. And it's very, very beneficial for all stomach problems. It has a very soothing and healing effect, actually, on any part of the body that it comes in contact with. It's used in the treatment of sore throats, of indigestion, of digestive irritation, as well as stomach ulcers. It has the capacity to neutralize excess acids in the stomach as well as in your intestines. It can also be used externally to heal wounds and burns, and it can actually relieve irritated and inflamed or itchy skin. It's very, very, has a mucilage type effect. If you mix it with water, it has like a gel type effect. So if you take it inside and you drink it, it goes inside, and if your stomach is inflamed, it can actually draw, if you will, that inflammation from the body. Again, that's why I point out the mucilage is slippery, and slippery elm is an excellent remedy for the irritation and inflammation of the reproductive as well as the respiratory system, as well as the urinary tract. Some of the way it's been used in Crohn's disease, it's been used in food poisoning, and it's been used in irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. I've also used it for toothaches by combining one part of slippery elm with one part of charcoal, and maybe even you can even add those two work by themselves. You can even add flaxseed, ground it, and mix one part of each one for toothaches into a little water, make a gel out of it, place it around compact it around the tooth that's hurting, and probably nearly 100% of the time, you're going to get great relief. The only problem you may have with if you have a tooth that has a crown on it, and even then, if you put it down around the gum, you may be able to draw the inflammation and thus the pain out. Those two, slippery elm and charcoal, and if you would like, you can add flaxseed, ground of flaxseed. But definitely, it's one of the reasons. It's one of my favorite herbs to use. It's very versatile. Again, that's slippery elm bark. But we are about out of time. I would like to thank you for listening. I want you to join me again next week, same time, 7 to 8 p.m. If you didn't come in and get the first part of the show, I'd like to remind you you can, in about 10 minutes, the show will be available for rebroadcast. You can listen to it on here or on your phone or on your mobile device, on your computer. You can download it to CD and listen to it in your vehicle or whatever. You can download the file and put it in your listening device as you go jogging or whatnot. Again, I'd like to thank you for listening. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry, and God willing, I will see you.